from Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our southwestern studios in La Crosse, and thank you very much for joining us. And today's topic is solar energy and sustainability and how people in the Cooley region and throughout the Driftless area can make those efforts to become more sustainable and what some plans are underway just to do just that. I'm joined by several guests this hour. First off, on the phone, we have three guests with us this segment. Marilyn Pedretti, you've heard her on this show before talking about election-related issues owing to her actual career, but she's also a local advocate for environmental concerns and is a member of the Sierra Club, a past president of the local chapter of that organization. Marilyn, welcome back to Newsmakers.
Thank you.
Also, also joining us today is Lily Herling, a recent graduate of Central High School in La Crosse, soon to be a student at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And she is part of an organization called SOLS, which stands for Solar on La Crosse Schools. Lily, thank you very much for joining us.
Glad to be here.
And we have Lewis Kuhlman, who is the environmental planner for the City of La Crosse, and we're going to talk to him about how the city is involved in all of this. Lewis, thank you very much for joining us today.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So I want to talk to each of you in turn and just get your individual stories about how you first became interested in sustainability overall or in solar power in particular. Let's start with you, Lewis. How did you first become interested in issues surrounding sustainability?
It's kind of been an interest of mine, you know, most of my adult life. I've been, I grew up on a farm, so, you know, close to the great outdoors, and loved animals growing up. So I think just sort of my background experience then. But as I was pursuing an advanced degree in urban planning, there were a number of different options, but I really thought where I wanted to make my impact was in environmental planning. So helping cities become more engaged with nature, like using our natural resources in a responsible way and living in harmony with those resources.
Lily, you've just graduated from high school, and yet you're already involved in what's a pretty big project, which is to try to drive the La Crosse schools toward a more sustainable way of living by helping raise funds for solar power in La Crosse schools. Talk about your involvement with sustainability issues and how this became a concern for you.
Yeah, I would say until about maybe a year ago, I was not super passionate about sustainability, but a year or so ago, the beginning of last summer, my friends kind of roped me into founding a climate action team group in our city, and we spent last summer we staged like climate demonstrations, and I guess you could call them protests outside City Hall, just trying to raise awareness surrounding the climate crisis. And so I continued that work through the school year, participated in some different climate strikes, like the one on September 20th. And then through that, I met some people in the community. Kathy Van Maren, who works with the Sierra Club, she invited me to be a part of this group, and I was just really grateful for the opportunity to get involved and to actually make some concrete changes, because I tried to talk to some administrators about solar at Central while I was a student there, and it was just, it's not within the school's budget, especially right now with COVID expenses, so I just jumped at this opportunity to get involved.
And Marilyn, we're going to get a little bit deeper into your story later on in the program and talk about some very unique involvement that you have with environmental sustainability. But talk about what got you interested in the issue. How long have you been chasing this idea of environmental concern?
Sure. I think I have always been called a tree hugger. I have been a Sierra Club member for a long time, but even before that, I am an affiliate with the Franciscan Sisters in La Crosse. And as you know, they're very in tune with the environment. They are all about creation and how we have to take care of what we've been given. But it wasn't until I moved to El Paso, Texas to do a one-year AmeriCorps, and I helped build straw bale houses along the border. And we were doing solar with those houses, and it was a very unique combination. Then I moved back to the Wisconsin area, got involved with the Midwest Renewable Energy Association, went to their energy fair, which is absolutely fabulous, and started hanging out with people like me and who are very excited about solar and renewable energy. And at the same time, I was planning on building my home. And so everything just came together for that. And now we have solar panels on our town hall. I think the solar industry has changed in even just the last 10 years. So that's kind of a progression, starting just being aware of being sustainable, being conscious of Mother Earth, and moving into being conscious as how I live.
Lewis, as you look citywide in the city of La Crosse at the different ways that the city goes about things, I know everybody would like to just, you know, snap their fingers and make City Hall solar powered or something like that. But what does it look like as you're involved in environmental planning throughout the city to try to incorporate the use of natural resources instead of maybe some of the resources that we've used historically?
One of the things that we're using to be more energy efficient and use renewable energy within city facilities is what's called a performance contract, where we work with an energy service provider, energy service company, and they propose different solutions different solutions that we can use at our facilities to be more energy efficient and to use renewable energy, And then we fund it using the savings, the energy savings. So say you're saving, a few thousand dollars a month. All that money that we had put aside in our budget to pay for that extra energy, we instead direct that to paying off the loan to implement these services. So we've upgraded our lights on a number of facilities. We've upgraded our boilers and chillers and our HVAC. And we're just now, just this summer, installing solar panels on the La Crosse Center, the main public library, the Municipal Service Center, and we're still working on putting some solar panels on City Hall.
So there are some solar panels going up on city-owned facilities across town. Once those are installed, those facilities, obviously the La Crosse Center is not going to be fully solar powered, but how much power can you generate in terms of the facilities that you've already retrofitted with solar panels?
I think to maximize sort of the cost and benefit of different regulations and fees, the systems that we've installed are about 100 megawatts, and that's kind of the sweet spot for taking advantage of, like I said, the incentives and the sort of fees working with our utility providers. So, and that's maybe about like 10% of say City Hall or the La Crosse Center, but it'd be more for the Municipal Service Center and the library.
We're talking about solar energy today on Newsmakers. That is Lewis Kuhlman, who's the environmental planner for the city of La Crosse. Joining us also today, Lily Herling, a soon-to-be college student, a recent Central High School grad, and part of the SOLS program, the Solar on La Crosse Schools effort, as well as Marilyn Pedretti joining us today, who is a member of the Sierra Club and a local environmental activist and an advocate. And our conversation with them will continue. If you'd like more information on our program, you can find it at our website, which is wpr.org/newsmakers. The program continues in a moment. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. It's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in La Crosse. Thank you very much for listening to our show about solar power. We're harnessing the power of the sun today on Newsmakers and talking about other sustainability efforts as well. Joining us today, Lewis Kuhlman from the city of La Crosse, Lily Herling from the SOLS Project, Solar on La Crosse Schools, and Marilyn Pedretti, who's a member of the Sierra Club. And I want to start with you, Marilyn, this segment, because You have gone all the way into this deal on environmental consciousness, and you actually live off-grid. Talk about what that's like.
Sure. I do indeed live off-grid and have for about 12 years. It's interesting because people say, oh, you live in Wisconsin, that's not possible. And I am living proof that it is. Germany is like 40%. You know, solar, and they have less sun than we do. So it is possible, and I like to tell people that. I open my house up often for open houses or educational things, college groups stop in. It's not that complicated, really. I do have a battery bank. Other than that, you wouldn't know I'm off-grid. If you walk in my house, it would be a typical electrical outlets and everything. You know, you can have a TV and a computer. It doesn't mean that you're, you know, living in a cave.
You don't have to just sit in darkness and eat granola all the time.
And I think when I first talked about building my house, that's what people thought. And they thought I'd have an outhouse and, you know, it's going to be primitive. And like, no, it's okay. I do have to think differently. You know, I'm not going to do laundry at night. I'm going to do laundry when the sun is shining to have that extra energy. Could I do laundry at night? Yes, but it would drain my batteries. So you just kind of have to think a little differently. And I also, the first step to any solar project is to actually, you know, figure out what you need for energy needs and do you really need all this? There's a lot of wasted energy out there in America. I think 40% from the time it's generated to transmitted to used, 40% is wasted. So just rethinking what's important in life. So a lot of that went into before I started. And actually, when I first was building my house, I was just going to have solar panels to sell back and live that way. But I went to some of these workshops that the Midwest Renewable Energy Association put on. I'm like, I can be off-grid. And I thought I'd try it for a couple of years. And 12 years later, here I am. So it's really not that complicated. It feels right to me to live a smaller footprint than I can. It works for me.
So the what you mentioned, having solar panels to sell back, a concept that's often called net metering, right? Where you're actually providing power back into the grid, that which you don't use, whereas yours goes to your own battery system. Correct. That you use to run completely off grid. So your house isn't even hooked up to the electrical system at all?
Correct. It would have cost me about $3,000 to hook up to this system because of where my house was located on the property. And then I would have had to pay, at the time, I think it was $18 a month for a box to sell it back to the company. And I thought, that's nuts. And so my only expense is some distilled water every couple months to fill up the batteries. So I pay no electric bill. And I, like I said, I live quite comfortably.
So what was the biggest adjustment you had to make? You talked about assessing your actual needs versus, you know, current usage habits. What was the biggest thing you had to adjust to?
You know, not a lot. Having lived in El Paso for a while, having lived in some of these areas where, you know, you don't get a lot of these fancy things that you see in houses, little things that you don't even think about. Toasters take about 1,200 watts. That's a little bit too much. So I live without toast. It's not the end of the world. Microwaves take about 1,000. I have a microwave. You can use it. It's just not a priority appliance in my house. The biggest energy use, two of them, are the refrigerator and the water pump. because I'm not in the city. I don't have city sewer and water. The water pump kicks on. It uses, 1,200 watts for about 20 seconds. So you have to be aware how much water you're using on days in the middle of the winter when you're, maybe your batteries are getting a little low. This time of year, no biggie with the sun shining every day.
So every time you go buy something, you're pretty conscious of how much energy that's going to be sucking out of your system.
Exactly. It's just being more aware of what that is. So I have a computer. I have a TV. I have a VCR. I mean, I don't have them plugged in all the time. They're on smart cords. I watch movies in the winter. That's what I have a TV for. So it's just rethinking. Right. I don't do ironing. I mean, I don't know anybody who does ironing anymore, but that takes a lot of power. So I don't have one. I just don't have a, and again, I don't use these things, but some people have blow dryers, hair dryers or curling irons. They take up a lot of electricity. So you have to really think about whether that's important, and if so, when you're using them.
Is there an item or like a luxury item or something like that that you were surprised how frequently you were able to continue to use it in spite of being on solar power?
Not really. I live a simple life. I use about 3 kilowatts of power a day, which is pretty low. But I don't watch TV. I don't need a whole lot running. I don't have an air conditioning, which this time of the year is a little bit tricky, but not the end of the world. I work with nature instead of against her. I have nice shade trees and things like that. So I think air conditioning would be a luxury at this point that I don't have. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's very interesting. We'll talk more about that level of sustainability and what first steps for people could be as we continue. Lewis, I'm interested in the City of La Crosse's efforts. You talked about working with an organization that helps you assess where you can make certain efficiencies go a little bit farther, like changing out your light bulbs and that kind of thing. Talk about some of the efforts that the City of La Crosse has made to use energy more efficiently.
Specifically on lighting, we've replaced all of City Hall lights with LEDs. Same thing at the library and at the La Crosse Center. And when you're looking at, like, for example, the La Crosse Center's huge, old lights, those use a lot of energy. So it's amazing what sort of benefits we get from that and how quickly the return on investment is for lighting to sort of offset the cost of some of the other improvements. One of the things we took advantage of, part of our program and things that the folks in La Crosse and even in Wisconsin statewide can take advantage of is the state's Focus on Energy program that offers rebates for these upgrades. And the overall projects have been millions of dollars, but we've gotten like over $100,000 back in rebates. So, and then in addition to all the savings that we're accumulating over the life of the lights. So that's one of the quickest and easiest improvements is upgrading to LEDs. And then that helped offset the cost of the boilers, chillers, and HVAC. And then in our second phase, we installed solar panels. That was just like a one-for-one thing. That we didn't really need that to offset any other costs. So, I mean, we're looking at some other efficiency improvements. One of the things I can talk about, too, is not to disparage what Marilyn's advocating for, and I think her ideas are great, and there's a lot of people who would go for that. One of the things from a city planning perspective is we're really trying to figure out how to take advantage of scale. So making sure that we're using our resources most efficiently. So Marilyn has a great example of using, she has her own septic system and whatever, and that's good out on the prairie. But when you're talking about a cluster of homes all having their own septic system, that's not maybe the best use of resources. So when we get more and more people together, like especially in the city, we're hopefully getting more efficient services and utilities. So thinking about like living a compact lifestyle within the city is also possible. So I think there's two different ways to approach that. And I think they're both beneficial. And it kind of depends on your lifestyle, too. I mean, if you're more in tune with nature, then that sort of off the grid lifestyle works. But if you want to be a little bit more urbane, then, you know, thinking about your house footprint inside town and the size of your lot, and, you know, hopefully you're still nearby parks and other great recreational amenities to take advantage of.
And it raises it encourages the idea that no matter how someone chooses to live their life, no matter what kind of lifestyle they have, everybody can look around them and figure out ways to use things more efficiently. Lily, as you've been involved with the SOLS project, Solar on La Crosse Schools, what kind of efforts have you undertaken to raise funds for that program as a group? And have you learned how much a project like that is going to cost?
Oh, that's a good question. I do know that, like the city, the school district has taken measures to try to reduce energy costs as much as possible with transitioning to LED lights. In terms of how much solar will actually cost the entire district, I could not give you an answer, but I do know that for a solar installation that we are working on at Summit Elementary, which is the district's environmentally focused school, one installation we are looking at for a sign marquee at the school to power the sign. I believe the cost for that is estimated at around $3,000. And I think that's around 24 panels,
okay.
An 8.9 kilowatt system. So it is a big undertaking.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think the SOLS team, it's unlikely that we'll be able to raise enough money to put solar on the roof of every school in the district. I think at this point, we just want to get the ball rolling and just help get the school started, help fund a few projects, as many as we can. And so far, we have only been fundraising for maybe 2 months, and we've raised enough to fund the sign marquee at Summit. So that was exciting.
That's
even
great.
Though it's a very small installation.
No, but that's great. And imagine the educational opportunity as well for students who will, you know, see that coming and going from that area and be able to be exposed to that kind of thing happening right there at their own school.
Exactly. That's another big goal of our group, is just to get solar out there in the schools, get students interested, and give students hands-on experience too.
How long, you talk about people who learn from doing, what kind of educational value has this process been for you in terms of being involved with the SOLS project?
I'm definitely learning about how expensive solar is, but also that the costs are going down, and it's actually quite attainable, and the payback is really worth it. Just looking at one of the project proposals that we have for the Summit project, just putting in the sign marquee, that is estimated as equivalent to planting 5,000 trees in terms of offsetting carbon emissions. So regardless of the cost, it's definitely worth it.
Marilyn, you would have some personal knowledge about the upfront cost of that kind of solar. You talked about, though, your monthly expenses related to powering your home not being that much, amounting to basically some distilled water. How would you talk to people who are interested in this sort of thing, but say that upfront cost is just more than I can handle right now?
Sure. And I think Lily mentions it nicely. It's small steps. You start with a little of this, a little of that, and you see what you can afford and what works. So, you know, maybe you're not going to power your whole house, but maybe you're going to at least start with, you know, a couple kilowatts of power to offset your costs. And it's more than just the upfront costs. And I wish we could do a cost of what it was for a coal plant to provide your electricity in your house. There's environmental costs that are huge. And near any coal plant, there's asthma and there's health issues. And those things then cost money to go to a hospital, et cetera. There's more cost involved. So sometimes it you can't see the big picture because it's not presented to us. So small steps is great. I mean, I didn't really think I was going to go off grid, but I took a huge leap with a temporary, you know, understanding maybe it won't last, but I got to give it a try, and it worked for me. And I think Lewis is right. People live in cities. You can't necessarily do the off-grid thing or what have you, but you can do those small steps, and you can be part of the solution and part of, I think he called it compact living. I like that idea. We all just need to take those small steps to move on to that next step.
And in terms of solar, you talked about why net metering wasn't the right thing for you. This idea of using solar power to power your house, but also, you know, instead of storing extra power that's generated into a battery system of some kind, it goes back into the system, and basically you sell it back into the system. So, you know, maybe somebody doesn't have enough money to front the conversion of their entire property to solar power, but that doesn't mean that they can't power something. You know, Lily gave the example of the sign at the school, but it could be, you know, you get enough solar power to power, you know, the lights in the garage or something like that.
Right. I mean, I think there are so many options. There's so many degrees of which you can do it. And the first is education. What kind of power are you needing? What kind of power do you use, and where can you conserve? And I think the city of La Crosse did a lot of studies on that to figure out where they could conserve power, how they could save some energy before they even went, like the LEDs. You know, if you're trying to solar power all those old fashioned incandescents, it would take a lot more solar panels. So you have to start with that. And anybody can get an energy efficiency study done on their house and save money that way, and then see what they can power with solar.
So speaking of something that anybody can do, if somebody is hearing this conversation and saying, you know what, I really could evaluate my life and try to make create some efficiencies, even if I don't go, you know, whole hog, so to speak. What are a couple of things that somebody who's thinking about environmentalism, about sustainability for the first time, what are a couple of things that they can do to lessen their footprint?
I would say their first bet is, you know, what are your energy use? Incandescent lights shouldn't, you know, that's an easy fruit to pull off a tree and switch to LEDs. Power strips, we use a lot of phantom energy. We have things plugged in and we don't use it, still take energy. Put them on power strips. Those are quick I can think of.
Lewis, is any of the research that you've done in helping the city become more sustainable, does any of that translate easily into things that people can look around for in their own homes?
Yeah, I mean, Marilyn brings up a good point. I mean, there are people that will go around and do energy audits for individual homeowners. So those kinds of professionals are available. There are online kind of self audits you can do. In terms of what we've done for the city, it's you have to think about it in terms of like the savings over like the length of the financing, because we're really on a tight budget, and I'm sure there's a lot of homeowners who are feeling the same way. Like we're kind of in a crunch right now, so thinking about where the biggest bang for our buck is, and I think Marilyn already kind of address some of that. I think, you know, looking at insulation and, you know, making sure you don't have leaky windows is a good place to start. Leaky windows and doors, cleaning out your air conditioner filter. I mean, there's some pretty low-level maintenance stuff that you can do that'll hopefully help. And also some fairly cheap technology if you're really interested in monitoring, you know, some of those phantom loads that Marilyn was talking about, to see what, like, say your microwave or your toaster or your refrigerator or your computer use.
We're talking about sustainability and particularly solar power today on Newsmakers. I'm pleased to be joined by Lewis Kuhlman, whom you've just heard. He is the environmental planner for the city of La Crosse. Also joining us are Marilyn Pedretti, a member of the Sierra Club and a local advocate for environmental and sustainability causes, and Lily Herling, a recent Central High School graduate who is now working to raise funds for different solar-powered items in the La Crosse school system. And I thank them all for joining us. Our conversation with them will continue. First, let me tell you, if you would like to listen to part of this program again, you can stream our shows on demand anytime you like online at wpr.org/newsmakers. If you want to take our show on the go, just open your favorite podcast platform, search for Newsmakers, and hit subscribe. We'll continue in just a moment. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest Bureau. We are talking about solar power today, harnessing the power of the sun and creating a more sustainable energy footprint in our communities. I'm pleased to be joined by Lily Herling, by Lewis Kuhlman, and by Marilyn Pedretti. And we've been talking about all the different ways that people can, on an individual basis, or ways that the city of La Crosse in particular has engaged in more sustainable practices. Next, I want to talk about an effort called Grow Solar La Crosse. It's an effort between the city of La Crosse and the county of La Crosse, and it's going on throughout the summer. So I know, Marilyn, I know you're familiar with that. I know Lewis must be familiar with that. Let's start with you, Lewis. Talk about the Grow Solar La Crosse initiative and what that is and how it works.
Initially, what we had done was, as part of the Green Tier Legacy Communities, we partnered with Midwest Renewable Energy Association to help the city improve our sort of solar panel installing friendliness to get this designation called SolSmart. So we received our SolSmart designation at the silver level earlier this year, late last year, and sort of the next step from that was, okay, we've got our regulations in place. So now hopefully installing solar panels will be a lot easier to understand. Now let's get people together and take advantage of this. So the Grow Solar La Crosse program is intended to be sort of take advantage of economies of scale by doing a bulk purchase. So the more people that are interested in buying solar panels for their house, the lower the cost, because we're going to a single contractor, and that contractor will then, you know, will do a bulk purchase and save money that way, and they'll be able to save money by, you know, kind of focusing on a smaller area rather than traveling, you know, throughout a wider region to install solar panels.
Marilyn, have you been involved in this effort, and how would you describe it to somebody who's thinking, I don't know if I'm ready to make that move yet?
Sure, I have been involved. I actually was contacted by the MREA to be one of the panelists to present. So we do an hour-long show periodically. It's all online, so you don't have to go anywhere. You can jump in and learn. And it's kind of a solar 101. Basics about solar, so people can understand what it is that this solar company can do and how this bulk buy purchasing works for the community and how it works for everybody. And that's been very exciting. I like to spread the word that solar energy is very doable in La Crosse. And so I've been involved with the MREA for that, and I think that the city of La Crosse and the county of La Crosse are doing some great things getting solar on, and now we need to get residents involved. It's great.
So the whole idea behind this is that the bigger an order of solar panels you can make at a time, the smaller the price for each of those individual solar panels is going to be. So when you open it up to the community, like Lewis said, you know, it's a bulk buying thing. But a lot of what people often who are pitched solar, there are a lot of companies that run around and pitch expensive financing options and have lopsided long-term contracts where really the main benefit is to the company selling the hardware. And people get themselves into deals that aren't really deals at all. What can you say about people who might be worried about being taken advantage of in this kind of an effort?
I'd say that, you know, Midwest Renewable Energy Association is a nonprofit, and they've done a lot of group buys throughout the state and further. And I think it's kind of their reputation on the line if they were to, you know, recommend an unscrupulous installer. So when we're looking for a contractor, we're looking for a specific set of requirements. So we can really rein in that sort of greed, I guess. So, I mean, of course, the installers are going to make money, but I mean, they're also passing along their savings too. So it's not a very aggressive margin. It's not a predatorial, I would say.
So, if someone were to participate in a program like this, installation is part of it.
Yes.
And
I was going to say there's. We're doing these solar power hours, which kind of lay out the program. There's a couple left, so people can go to growsolarlacrosse.org to sign up for those.
And that website, one more time, where people can find when those events are and how to sign up?
Yeah, growsolarlacrosse.org.
Lily, I want to circle back to you because early on in our conversation, you mentioned. A thing called a climate strike, and I wondered if you could talk a little bit more about that. That's not something that I've been very familiar with.
Sure. So throughout, I'd say in the past year, there's been several climate. I refer to them now, I suppose, as demonstrations, just because sometimes I've learned now that the term strike is misused sometimes. So essentially just I worked with some community members and my friends. We organized just different, usually involved basically lots of signs with messages about the urgency of the climate crisis and other climate-related topics, sustainability-related topics, and then usually in the spring last summer, we would stand outside City Hall and just stare down all the drivers. And then this past last fall on September 20th was a global climate demonstration with people all over the world striking from school and some people from work, I'm sure. And here in La Crosse, we marched from the park, Burns Park, down to Ron Kind's office, and we had a petition for people to sign. We were trying to get Ron Kind to sponsor the Green New Deal. Unfortunately, that I know of, he has not yet sponsored the Green New Deal. So, Ron Kind, if you're listening, we're still pushing for that. But mostly it's just to raise awareness and let our public officials and, I mean, business leaders, people in positions of power, let them know that we expect them, we need them to take action to address the climate crisis, especially just as young people. We're not in those positions to be making those decisions. And so we are just, you know, trying to make our voices heard.
This has been an incredibly interesting conversation all about solar power today, about climate issues, and about sustainable living. Our guests have been Lily Herling, who is with Solar on La Crosse Schools, or SOLS, a Central High School graduate. Lily, good luck to you as you attend the University of Wisconsin-Madison.
Thank you.
Also joining us today, Lewis Coleman, the environmental planner for the city of La Crosse. Thank you for joining us, Lewis.
Yeah, you're welcome. It was nice talking to you.
And Marilyn Pedretti, a member of the Sierra Club, former president of the local chapter of that organization, and as she says, a tree hugger from long ago, and currently someone who lives in an off-grid house, which was an interesting experience for me to hear about. Marilyn, thank you for joining us again on Newsmakers.
Thank you.
And this is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. As I mentioned, we're talking about solar power today, and we will continue that conversation. Have you ever thought about a job in sustainability? Well, what kind of education do you need to get that job? We'll talk about some of the opportunities that might be available right after this. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in La Crosse. Thank you very much for listening. Today we've been talking about solar power, renewable energy, sustainability, and all kinds of issues thereabout. And we're joined now by Casey Meehan, who is the Director of Sustainability and Resilience at Western Technical College. Dr. Meehan, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to speak with you.
So sustainability, you know, people think of recycling, they think of environmentalism, they think of solar power in terms of on their homes or whatever, but you're dealing with more of the educational side of things. Talk about Western Technical College and what you are doing there in efforts to promote sustainability and to promote careers in sustainability.
Sure. So we really envision sustainability as being much broader than just care for the earth. That, of course, is important, right? But sustainability to us, we define it as thriving and building thriving communities. And of course, to build a thriving community takes more than just clean air and clean water. Those are some basic building blocks, but we also need things like quality education. And if we want people to really thrive, they need good health and well-being, both physical and mental health. We need access to decent jobs. We need people. We need to help pull people out of poverty. We need nutritious food. You know, there's all sorts of things that we need equality, right? So there's all sorts of things that go into this idea of sustainability. And really, so we define it as thriving. And so when we look at what we do on campus, we take a really broad broad scope of sort of the types of things that we try to do to promote sustainability. And of course, you mentioned the idea of a green workforce. That's really important, especially at the technical college. One of our big things is to help educate people and train people for the jobs of the future. And so we take that really seriously, and we try to incorporate sustainability and sustainable topics into every program that we teach at Western.
What are some of the efforts that have come up in the last few years that have become popular among students? What are those careers that people are really excited about?
That's a great question. I think that a lot of the careers, and I think we're going to see this even more in the future. A lot of the careers are just undefined right now. There's new possibilities opening up as we see the impacts of climate change, and we see what happens with COVID and all these other issues, that these disruptions that we're seeing, I think is going to change the workforce tremendously. Right now, you know, we have people that at Western that are interested in building sciences and energy management. So looking at how to make buildings more efficient, both residential and commercial. We have people looking at landscape horticulture. So we've got this great landscape horticulture program that helps our students envision what sustainable landscaping could be, right? So it's not maybe just our traditional American lawns, but how do we include native plantings and permaculture and food in our yards? And how do we do this in an organic way? But then also just with our programs that are maybe people wouldn't necessarily consider to be a sustainability field. But if we look at health and public safety and some of the classes that we teach and course programs we have around nursing, and, you know, I mean, that's all about well-being, right? And so what are the different what are the, how are we going to see environmental impacts affecting people's health in the future, and how do we prepare our students, our future nurses to deal with those? So really, I mean, there's I think just sort of a buzz in general about the possibilities of incorporating this sort of new way of thinking about the future and about jobs, and what types of skills and what types of disruptions we're going to have to be prepared for. I think there's just a buzz around that around campus. So it really permeates. It's not just one program. It permeates lots of different programs.
Speaking of lots of different programs, there are a number of ways in which Western Technical College is visible in the community, either through housing projects that you've been involved in constructing, or the huge greenhouses that are on the edge of your campus as people in town pass by those. What are some of those ways in which you've been able to incorporate some of these sustainability practices in some of the other programs that you're involved in?
We are, there's a couple of ways. I mean, first of all, you mentioned our buildings, right? We are so fortunate to have just incredible infrastructure at Western, and really sort of groundbreaking leading buildings that people from around the state come and tour and try to learn about what we've done. So, for example, one of the sort of, I guess that maybe the crown jewel building that we have is the ITC, or Integrated Technology Center, and that's the building. It's the 4-story building that's on 7th and Pine. And that has, it's got, you know, solar array out in front, but then it's heated with geothermal heat. So there's a system underneath the parking lot. There's a system of maybe, I think, 128 tubes that go down underneath our parking lot and are harvesting the heat from the earth to heat that building on cold, you know, cold winter days. And then it air conditions the building on hot summer days like we're experiencing now. So just some of our infrastructure, but then we also really try to partner with organizations in the area around sustainability issues. So a couple examples. One is the Sustainability Institute, which is a 501c3 that's housed at Western. Although it's its own separate institute, it's housed at Western. And that really has a mission of helping inspire the region to move towards sustainability and really celebrating the efforts that the region has made for sustainability. So with the Sustainability Institute, it does a great job at convening different members and people within the community to talk about and think about sustainability issues. We have a new partnership with GROW, which is a farm to school organization that does school gardens at the local lacrosse schools and gets young kids interested in fresh food and how you actually grow that food and creates curriculum around that for teachers to use. So really we love to partner with those types of organizations, and part of it is because we see at Western we occupy a pretty unique niche, and that we're positioned to convene lots of different people. You know, we have the size and sort of the voice to talk to big businesses in the area and government entities in the area, and then also community members. And we're just able to sort of pull those people around the table that, you know, lots of times these smaller community organizations might never get a chance to talk with some of these bigger businesses or talk with government entities. So we see part of our role in sustainability is helping to form those connections.
In our remaining moments, I want to give you an opportunity to let people know how they can get in touch with you, or how they can access information about the programs at Western. But maybe in the context of if somebody is trying to see sustainability, if they're interested in sustainability, how that might apply to future career choices and what kind of training they might need to accomplish that. How would they reach out to find that information?
Sure. So you could, probably the best way is just through our website, www.westerntc.edu. That will get you from there. That could get any prospective or interested member into any of our programs, and you can kind of look through the list of programs that we offer. You can also, with that same website, westerntc.edu/sustainability, get a lot more information on our sustainability efforts on campus.
Casey Meehan is the Director of Sustainability and Resilience at Western Technical College. Thank you very much for joining us today on Newsmakers.
Thank you. It's really been a pleasure.
This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall. If you've missed part of this program today, you can stream any of our shows online at wpr.org/newsmakers. A note from an earlier conversation, we spoke to one of the people that we spoke to earlier in the show, Lily Herling, is a recent graduate of Central High School, and she's involved in the SOLS program, which is the Solar on La Crosse Schools. And there's a website there where you can find some more information and a link to donate to their future projects if you're interested in that. That is solaronlacrosseschools.org. Thanks again for joining us. If you'd like to take our show on the go, you can find us in any podcasting platform. Open your favorite podcast app, search for Newsmakers, and hit subscribe. My producers are Dawn Jewell and John Davis. And for the rest of the team in La Crosse, I'm Ezra Wall. Join us next time for another Newsmakers right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.